Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's a click, so I hope you brought your A-game. Amen, no rain on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. Hey, mate, no lanes on the track.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
First day of summer.
So you're first no school then?
Well, I went to school today. I had to clean up the ink off the floor in my t-shirt lab. So I was literally on my hands and knees scrubbing paint off the floor, but I didn't have to be at work at a specific time, and I got up, I walked the dog, I hit the gym, and then I did that, and then I did homework. So, you know, I was off work, but I got paid. Teaching rules.
Yeah. That's I think you were probably born to be a teacher and you didn't even know it.
No, I think you might be right. Teach you. Yeah, it's a good gig for me. How are you?
No, I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little amped up. So I totally screwed up today. I actually woke up at 4 a.m. this morning, right? With every intention on working out. And I laid in bed for like 20 minutes. And then I got up, went downstairs, and I was like, you know, I could go work out, or I could sit here and watch television and make a pot of coffee. And I chose the pot of coffee route. Well, unfortunately, by about 1:30 in the afternoon, I hit a wall. Because I didn't start my day off right. So working out before work is probably the best way you can start your day, especially when you're like a married guy. Because what I always tell people, it's like an old Navy SEAL gave the speech one time, and he said, if you want to change the world, you can start by making your bed. And what he's trying to say is that way you start with something that you're accomplishing something first thing in the morning, right? And so I'm like, okay, well that could be my thing, but my wife's still in bed, so I can't like make the bed when she's still in it. So a lot of times I'm going to work while she's still asleep. So I'm like, I can just get up early and get my workout in. That way I have accomplished something right as I start my day. Well, I didn't do that this morning and it threw me off. And so about 1:30 in the afternoon, I start hitting a wall. So at 2 o'clock I go get a Starbucks, and I thought I could just drink the Starbucks and I'd be done with it by about, you know, 3 o'clock. Well, that did not quite work out. So I ended up having a meeting at 2:30. That meeting lasted 90 minutes, 4 o'clock. I come back to my office, Starbucks is still there, and I slam that bad boy. So I am amped. I feel good. I'm going to probably crash by the end of this thing, but I think we're all in a good mood, and I'm especially in an excited mood because we finally got our buddy John Muse back on the show. So I'm going to pull him up in a little bit. But before I do that, I got some feedback last week on our episode. Good feedback. Well, constructive feedback. So
the hell did we talk about last week? I don't even remember.
Well, it wasn't really, it had nothing to do with us. It had something to do with the Voices of Wrestling. So basically the folks that listen to our free feed on the Voices of Wrestling Network feed or the Mike and JD show feed, they were bombarded by ads. And at one point, like you were in the middle of a sentence and it had like 90 seconds worth of ads. You come back, you finish your sentence, and then they got hit with another 90 seconds. And so between like that 5 minute period, it was like mostly ads, right? And so what I told them was, I was like, if you don't like the ads, feel free to join Patreon. Go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. That is the best way to listen to the show. It is $5 a month. It is completely ad free. And not only that, if you are a listener, you check us out on the Voices of Wrestling feed, and we do love you for that. And I think you and I greatly appreciate you. But I actually get that, audio up first thing. So as soon as I'm done recording here, the first thing I do is download it. And I put it right on Patreon, so it gets right there to your podcast app, especially if you're one of those many people that don't want to see JD and I's dumb faces. You just want to hear our voices. You can get that early ad-free before everybody on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/MikeAndJDShow. But If you're watching us on YouTube, I greatly appreciate that too. Give us a big thumbs up, hit the subscribe button, and make sure you comment on the video. Let us know how we're doing. And if you're on the Voices of Wrestling Network YouTube, put a comment in there and tell Joe and Rich that you love Mike and JD. Despite Mike's obnoxious thumbnails at the time, you still love me. I would greatly appreciate that. Hey, JD, so do you think anybody's going to get the theme of the thumbnail tonight that I sent you?
No, I didn't get it. It took me a minute to get it.
Am I the only one that's ever seen Bob Dylan's No Direction Home?
No, I have. But just that was a it's a deep cut for a wrestling podcast, Mike. I'll be honest with you.
I actually
it was on Hurdle today. You ever play Hurdle?
No.
It's like Wordle but with music. Oh, it's so fun. I play it with some of the kids in my class, and today I played it by myself and got my ass kicked. And that was one of the songs today, coincidentally.
Oh. Yeah, nice. So, So the theme of the show today is the direction of AEW essentially. And we've been talking with John for a while. I'm going to go ahead and pull John in. Booker extraordinaire John Muse, welcome to the show, John. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing? How you guys doing? I'm excited. I'm a little bit. I hit my wall earlier, but I did take an energy drink. I don't normally do that unless I'm going to drive someplace. But I did that now, so hopefully it'll pick me up and we'll be good.
Hey, Mike, this is an overtime. I just noticed the graphic.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, I'll switch the graphic. The graphic's been up since Sunday, honestly. Boom. Okay, there we are. Yep.
There we go.
Magic. Yeah.
So John and JD and I, we have like a group chat that's been going on for, I think a couple years. Now, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the theme of that is us been kind of like, you know, it seems like the direction of AEW right now is not doing well. And in fact, they're heading in the wrong direction completely. And we thought maybe it was just us three that were noticing that. But if you listen to the flagship, you know, Joe and Rich have been picking up on that. Dave and Brian have been really critical on Wrestling Observer Radio. So a lot of people have been kind of noticing that the direction of AEW heading into Double or Nothing just hasn't been good. The numbers are reflecting that. Everything's reflecting that. Things just aren't hitting. Things are not working. The storylines, some of them just don't make any sense. They have weak challengers for the titles. Too many titles at that. There's just so much going on in AEW. We thought, well, hell, what better way to talk about this situation than to bring on Mr. John Muse, Booker extraordinaire. So, John, we really do thank you for being here, man.
Oh, again, thank you for asking. I appreciate it. I know it's sometimes hard to grab me on things and all that. So I do appreciate the patience there. And I'm excited. I think we all agree. We all love AEW, right? We want it to succeed. We need AEW. You know, the business needs AEW. And that's kind of what drives some of the frustration, I think. You know, we all want it to be great. And whenever we start feeling, you know what, it's a little moving away from what AEW is or what we think it is or feel, we start getting bothered by that. And I think that's what's driving a lot of things lately.
Yeah, absolutely. And JD actually put out a tweet that I think got a lot of play. I actually trolled his tweet.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Great.
Yeah, he said, you know, he said it's okay to criticize AEW, and he's absolutely right, but some people just don't want to hear it. And you guys got to understand where I come from. My friend BQ was saying this on his podcast. I have a military background. So giving critical feedback is just kind of part of our culture. It's part of our nature. But I don't like to just criticize. And when I tell people to give me feedback, I never say don't. I always say, don't bring me problems, bring me solutions. Mm-hmm. And that's why having a guy like John Muse on, who's got ideas about how there's a better way to do things. So John, since we got you here, the main storyline that's been driving AEW since February, it has been the evil EVPs. The EVPs have turned heel. They have taken over the company. They did the Meltzer driver to one Tony Khan. He did give me a great thumbnail pick, which I used a lot and got a lot of views. So thank you, Tony. I appreciate that. But they did the Meltzer driver. Now they got the big match coming up at Double or Nothing. AEW versus the EVPs, even though everybody there works for AEW. It just seems like that storyline is not working, man. So, John, what are your overall thoughts on the storyline? Where did they go wrong, and how could they do it better?
All right. Well, first off, if you went back to when AEW was formed and said, okay, look, write down things that you hate about WWE and why we need another company who won't be WWE, what do you think one of the things would be?
Authority figure.
Yes. Okay. So I think that's the first point that we need to think about is, you know, AEW is supposed to be the alternative. And I get it that things change over time and every product changes over time. But at the end of the day, we don't want WWE. And that's one of the things that WWE was kind of known for and really drove. So I think that may be part of what's going on and why maybe it isn't catching. See, to me, I'm okay with the Bucks. I like the Bucks. They're probably the best tag team of all time, right? So I can enjoy them because they're going to go out and have good matches and they're going to be good with what they do. But again, it's not about me. It's about what the mass audience wants. So I think the problem there is that you've got evil authority figures. People may not be really into something like that. And if you look back over the last few years, one of the common themes with AEW has been a lot of internal like discourse, right? Just people that, you know, we had the Punk drama and the EVP stuff, which they're attached to, right? Over the last few years, we've seen a lot of that. And I don't think people want to see the infighting. They want to see things going forward, not looking back.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think I see there. And I wonder if that might be causing some of the problems. People, and if you look at the message, and JD can probably talk about this, especially, you know, as a real writer. You know, I just book some ideas and throw some things around. But from a writer perspective, what is the Bucks' goal? What do they want? Why do they want to do whatever it is they're doing? What is the real issue? Do we want the Bucks and Tony to be feuding at this point? They're supposed to be one of the founding members, things like that, which was supposed to be a united group to bring better wrestling than what we were getting. So what is the Bucks' message in this? What do they want? What do we really, has this been established?
No, that's the problem. It's like when you have characters, protagonists, antagonists, you need to have a goal. Like, right, the number one objective of a story is before you have anything, everyone talks about storytelling in wrestling, story, story, story. A story at its core, this isn't J.D. Oliva, this is Robert McKee saying this, is you have a character that has a goal, right? And in their way is something. Something is stopping them from achieving that goal. Could be man, could be nature, could be forces beyond, whatever. It's just there's something in the way, which is why pro wrestling at its core should work perfectly with story. But we have these characters of the Young Bucks. What is their goal? To run AEW? Like, haven't they been doing that for, like, it's never been established. That's a big part of the problem, is like very rarely do we have people coming out here and establishing their goals, right? John Moxley does a pretty good job at every time he gets the mic, but not everyone does. I think that's a big problem right now with the Bucks specifically, is we don't know what their goal is. It's muddled right now.
Right. And if you think about it this way too, it's like, if you don't really establish the goal, what is the viewer going to do? They're going to try to figure out what they think the goal is. And it's going to be different amongst different people, right? Everybody's not going to just land on the same thing unless it's been clearly established. So if you think about it from the Bucks perspective, okay, they want it to be like it used to be. Okay, well, isn't one of the complaints that some viewers have is that AEW isn't what it used to be? Which would make the Bucks what? What would that make the Bucks if they want it to be what it used to be and fans are like, I want it to be like it used to be? That makes the Bucks the good guys.
Correct.
So then what is AEW then? The heels.
The heel.
All right.
Yep.
So we have a mixed dynamic, right? And people are going to choose, or people are going to kind of pick a side, or, you know, but they won't want to pick the side of the Bucks necessarily, because the Bucks are what? They're kind of being dicks. But the Bucks have the right goal to some people. And it's very muddled. And it's hard when you have that situation. It's very hard, especially if it's something that people are like, you know what? You know, we got rid of Punk. You know, they fired Punk for the video that they showed and all this other stuff, which we'll leave it to whoever to debate whether that was a good idea or not. But the whole point is, you know, we saw that, and they fired Punk over it. So the Bucks are supposed to be the good guys. But they're the bad guys. So what are we supposed to do? Who are we supposed to support? Because if you support the Bucks, AEW's the heel. And it's just very mixed, and you got to establish a goal, and then you've got to kind of stick along whatever goal you establish. That has to be their driving force. They have to have their obstacles. The good guys have to have the obstacle, which is the Bucks, if you want to establish it properly. I mean, right, JD? I mean, isn't that the core of what we're, you know, what we need to establish?
Well, I think that's our problem too, is we have our antagonists set, but who is the protagonist? Who drives this company right now? Shouldn't it be Swerve Strickland? He's the champion.
Well, yeah. And that could go back to your other point too of, you know, we've got to establish somebody, because it's not Tony. It's not like the Bucks are going to fight Tony.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be who. And if it's, you know, Kenny's on the shelf for a little while getting healed up, and hopefully that goes really well and really fast, because we need Kenny Omega, folks. You know, you've got that. So who should it be? And you want it to be what? People of a high enough stature, because mm-hmm. this is supposed to be an important matter.
You know, I think that's the problem right now, is we're emulating Austin McMahon, right? Like, that's clear. Anytime you do heel authority figure versus babyface story, that's what you're doing. You're aping Austin McMahon. Very clearly, we knew who the antagonist and who the protagonist was in that dynamic, right? Steve Austin was the story driver of that particular era. And again, I would love to just take the Attitude Era, put it on a shelf, and just say that's that, and never touch it again. But we can't. We're incapable of doing that. Right.
We even brought the Brood back this week. We even brought Bloodbath back.
Let's not get started on that. But Bloodbath is the pressure washer. It almost knocked Malachi unconscious. Like,
yeah, they literally shot it down on him.
Yeah, they did. They whooped his ass with that thing. Boy, you talk about Malachi having a hard time getting down on the mat for something. He got down on the mat for that Bloodbath. I'll tell you that right now. most selling he's done in months. Like, that's the problem. Is like, who are they? Like, who is the driver right now? Like, who is the guy that we're supposed to rally around with this whole thing? I don't know. Bryan Danielson fights against being the top guy. He refuses to do it. So who is it? Who's the guy? It should be Swerve, but it's not.
Yeah. Swerve's involved in the storyline. Swerve's in the storyline, but he's too focused on Christian, because for whatever reason, the Young Bucks decided to put Christian in that spot instead of their ally, Jack Perry. Which in storyline would actually make more sense, but it'd be a lower marquee match if they did Jack Perry. Not that Christian is much better. Yeah, they could have done Okada.
Yeah. See, you know, and I mean, they may build into Swerve, and they're probably going to pull Swerve in at some point, but they had the opportunity to do that when they had that huge lead in from the NBA on the NFL draft weekend, when they got all that little mainstream publicity. They could have pulled Swerve in right there, when they would have had that audience and done something hot to start that show. And then you pull all of that together, all the work for the mainstream stuff, the guy you want to build around right now and Swerve. It could have been done then, but we didn't do it. And I mean, mm-hmm. it's a choice that they made, but you know, it's just kind of, you kind of wonder. And that's not to take away from like FTR or obviously Danielson, because they're great. It's just that they're not a focal point for something that's supposed to be as important as the company, which is what that's supposed to represent.
Yeah, I think they've been kind of just waiting for Adam Page to get back, and then that's when they're finally going to bring Swerve into this picture, because they want to do another Page and Swerve match. But it just whatever he's got going on in his life, he just can't come back. So in the meantime, it's kind of like he's in this lame duck program with Christian Cage, who everybody loves. Christian Cage is one of the greatest ever, but as far as a marquee, he doesn't have that marquee name to be driving the main event of a pay-per-view, you know?
Right. Yeah. Christian, side note on Christian, because he's so tremendous. One of the scrums that I sat in for, he came in, and that was one of the earliest ones that he had done in character, and highlight of the day, him walking in and asking everybody how their fathers were doing. And then he sat there during the whole thing, and you didn't always see this because, you know, sometimes it focused on Tony, the cameras or whatever, but Christian worked the whole room. He would stare right through you, and he would go person to person doing that the whole time. It was tremendous. Side note. Anyway, he's great.
Well, he's great. What did they do to build this? Like nothing. And again, since getting here, it's been all right. It's probably been my favorite stuff on the TV is the Christian Swerve stuff lately.
Yeah.
But like, it's how we got here. I mean, like, they don't want to do I don't know if you heard Joe, our boss, Joe Lanz's Patreon this morning, but I mean, like, called him lazy. And I don't think he's wrong. Called it a lazy sports entertainment show. And I don't think he's wrong.
No, I mean, there's things that they could have done. I mean, if you know Christian is going to be your guy, you could have started doing something a little sooner. if he's not available for whatever reason, then, you know, is Nick Wayne not available? Is Killswitch not available? You could have started laying some seeds, so then at least the choice makes sense. Because, mm-hmm. again, the Bucks picked the challenger. Why would they pick Christian and not Jack or not Okada or somebody else of some, you know, somebody important that hadn't recently just lost? You know, you could have tried to build Christian up a little bit more or done something. There's just options. But, I mean, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes either. So it's hard to criticize some things. But, yeah, it's questionable the way it went.
Yeah, highly questionable. There's just been a lot going on. You know, Double or Nothing is coming up on Sunday. And, I mean, on paper, obviously the matches are going to be out of this world. I mean, they're typically, like, extremely good. But the problem is that there's nothing really interesting going on. Like, there's not really anything that, like, is piquing the interest, at least of me. In fact, I thought Dynamite last night was quite boring, to be honest with you.
I did too.
Yeah. But that doesn't change the fact that AEW still has the best, you know, whatever you want to call them, pay-per-views. It's still pay-per-views for them or premium live events for everybody else. But they still have consumer confidence in the pay-per-view. So I think the pay-per-view might still do, like, pretty decent, but it's probably going to be a lot lower than what it normally is.
Yeah. And say what you want about, like, AEW when things aren't going necessarily as good as you want on TV. Everybody knows, like, the best value in AEW is the pay-per-views. Whatever money you're spending, you're going to get it. It's you're going to get your money's worth out of it. And that's something, like, Terry Funk would always say is, you know, you got to give people the money's worth. And you're going to get that from the pay-per-view. Now, the issues there aren't necessarily as strong as you would like, but, you know, the in-ring action is going to be good. So if you're looking for something like that, it's going to hit you. But not everybody does. Not everybody's looking for just in-ring. And that's some of the issues where you want to make sure stories kind of hit and you're hitting in the different, you know, the importance of the different things are all aligned and dynamics are right. And we see weird dynamics, things like, you know, Tony and Serena Deeb, that dynamic doesn't quite work. I don't know how you guys feel about that one.
Yeah. I think I'm on team Brian Alvarez on that one. I think that Tony Storm is, you know, should have been a babyface a while ago. Nobody wants to boo her. In fact, she should have been the babyface during the Deonna Purrazzo feud. Sorry, you tell them I'm pretty hungry. Deonna Purrazzo feud, because when she was in TNA, she was a heel most of the time because that's what she's most effective as. And mm-hmm. they brought her over and they made her a babyface thinking that she would get this big reaction. And she, you know, got an okay reaction in New Jersey as a babyface. But she's not a babyface. She's never been a good babyface. But they didn't want to pull the trigger. They wanted Toni Storm to be a heel. And then they kept flip-flopping her with this Serena Deeb feud. But nobody really, honestly, like, Serena Deeb, I'm sure, is a fine person. And she is a very good worker. But there's not a whole lot that's interesting about her. And and then they're putting her in this world title match with Toni Storm. And, look, say what you want about Toni. I haven't really been a fan of the act the entire time. There's occasionally, like, she'll make me laugh and it'll piss me off because I'm, like, supposed to be mm-hmm. anti-Toni Storm. But then she'll, like, crack me up. I'm like, damn it, she got me. But, you know, she should have been a babyface the whole time. And it just doesn't make any sense. So now they finally have made her a babyface and they made Serena a heel, despite the fact that she went out there and poured her heart out in front of the audience and said she almost died at one point. Like, nobody just cared. So because they're just going to cheer Toni Storm no matter what. So I think they're finally heading on the right track, but I don't really think anybody cares about the match. I think we already know the outcome. There ain't no way in hell Serena Deeb's winning that title because she just wouldn't be an interesting champion.
Yeah, and that kind of hurts things. You know, you want to have at least some doubt in some of the outcomes, and that's one of those matches where you kind of know it's where it's going. Almost like Mercedes and Willow, but they've done a really good, you know, job building that one. But, I mean, how does Mercedes lose in her first match, right?
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think that Mercedes should have been challenging for the TBS title in her first match. She should be going for the world title. It just seems weird to me. And I know that the storyline with Willow is there because she accidentally got hurt during the match, but it's not like they shot an angle for it. They brought her back and then had to educate the audience that she fell off the top rope and hurt her ankle. And so now she wants to get revenge for falling off the top rope, but she should have came in with world title aspirations. Cause that's really when people get behind you and they find you to be interesting. But I think the number one heel on the women's side for AEW is Mercedes Moné, and by far the number one baby face on the women's side is Toni Storm. That's where they should be going.
Yeah, eventually you want to go there. And you know, you mentioned that expectation kind of thing, right? Fans have expectations as well. And if people work under them, it kind of lowers the bar and can actually hurt the talent a little bit. And we see that with Mercedes possibly. We'll have to wait and see how this plays out. But everybody sees where she's coming in. She's supposed to be one of the top stars, so she should be shooting in that trajectory, right? But she's not. So does that impact things? And we see that a little bit, I think, with Ospreay. Going into the Danielson match, it looks like we're shooting for the moon with Ospreay. And then shortly after the Danielson match, like what, the Wednesday after, right? He's going for the international title now.
God. So annoying.
Yeah.
Well, so it's like, okay. Here's the thing that I think is interesting is that Tony Khan, we praised him for knowing who the first four champions were going to be, right? And they booked that out. Like they knew it was going to be Jericho, Moxley, Omega, and then Hangman, right? So the booking for the top made sense. And I think that since then it's been a little scattershot. But now I truly think he thinks he has these plans, but he's almost like inflexible with them at this point. Like Toni Storm, clearly the audience likes her despite what guys like us might think. So like they've dragged their feet on just making her a baby face, right? They just shouldn't this be like, shouldn't Mercedes' big debut be against Toni Storm for the top title? Like it doesn't make, none of it makes sense. Like Ospreay should be straddled to the top. Like I don't understand why we're having to hamstring these stories because Tony is so committed to doing what he wants to do and being inflexible. Like wrestling is one of the few mediums where you're dealing with a living, breathing organism. It's not like writing a book. It's not even like writing comics. Like you're developing it week by week and you can focus test it every single week and see what works and what doesn't. And it seems like he's being too rigid in his ideas right now to the point where it's leaving us with some flat shows, to be quite frank. And some nonsensical booking.
Yeah, and let me kind of speak on that a little bit, okay? With Ospreay is the example. And I'll use something that actually happened in real life, is that you have to know where to direct either heat from the fans and when something isn't going the way they want, or so that way they don't blame talent. They don't look at the talent as the issue as to why. In the case of Ospreay, I think we could be risking this. In that people are like, okay, well, Ospreay should be going for the world title. That's where he was heading. Now he's going down here. And the way that it worked out, it looks like that's something Ospreay is okay with and willing to do, right? I mean, that's how it's portrayed. He entered this gauntlet match to get an international shot when he was literally, he was supposedly number three in the rankings.
What rankings? We don't have those anymore.
Yeah, I'm just saying what I heard in that match with Danielson. They talked about him being number three in the rankings. He wins.
Rankings are inconvenient to Tony's storytelling. You only use it when we want to use it.
Selective rankings. But the point is you want to, if you're going to sideverse somebody or sidetrack them to where they're not going to where fans expect them to be going or what the fans expect, you need to do it in such a way where people don't raise questions about the talent or the company. It has to make sense. You have to direct the heat properly. Many, many years ago, I went to a show that I was not booking, but I went to a local show. I showed up and we were presented with a dilemma. Okay, we can't have the main event we're going to have. We have to change it up because the person was having a knee issue and couldn't be in a singles match, so we've got to make it a tag match. But this was a tag match that drew like 1,000 people into the place. It was a big deal. It was supposed to be what people were there for, and we're not going to deliver it because the guy can't do a singles match. So we're faced with a dilemma. Okay, well, if the company changes it, how do we look, right? The promotion looked like crap if we bait and switch. And it wasn't a bait and switch. It was literally, I'm not even sure I can do a tag match, but I think I can make it through, but I can't do a single. So we had to make a change. So we workshopped it and we found a way to redirect the heat away from the talent and away from the company to somebody else. And that's kind of the lesson there. We're blaming Will Ospreay or AEW, right? I mean, why else would he be there in the international scene, right? Instead of the world scene. Redirect the angle to Callis, Don Callis. Make him the reason that Will is being kind of held back, shuffled off to the side or things like that. If you want to take the path of delaying him, I don't know if they're delaying him or not. They certainly changed his trajectory. So if you're going to change the trajectory of the talent, you have to direct the heat the right way. Put it into the story. Put it into Callis. Don't have people wondering, why would Will go for this when he could have went for that? It makes Will look dumb.
It does. He's going for the fourth string title right now in the company, which makes no sense. Like, it would be much better if he was in a blood feud with somebody at the moment.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. He should have been screwed over by somebody somehow. And now we're in a super interesting blood feud that can easily just because like it makes sense if you want to kill somebody that okay, I'll get the title later. First, I have to murder this person that's in front of me. And we have that with Don Callis. Like, all we need to do now would have been better if Hobbs or something like that was still around. We did the Takeshita thing already. It would be good if we had somebody in that position. They've tried to make Roddy that guy. The problem is Roddy's in a group that no one cares about, right? The Undisputed whatever Kingdom has been snake bit from day one, and he's carrying around the fourth string title. Like, he's the Western States Heritage Champion.
Right. Yeah. And you know, and they waited to put the heat on Roddy until after they had already had Will go off willingly into the secondary situation.
Right. Backwards.
So yeah, it's backwards. Now, you could have done this, and this was something I had a conversation with people at the time. Okay. On the show where this gauntlet match happened, you had Fletcher was in the match against Swerve, I believe, and Mox had the match against Hobbs. You could have simply created a scenario where Callis manipulates Will into that match. And then it's Callis that's doing that to him and not Will. Whatever you do, you know, you make it sound like, you know, they ran a little interview segments in there through that show. You could have had Callis go to Will and go, I need you to be in this match because Takeshita can't do it. Something. Anything. Mm-hmm. But the point being that Callis manipulates Will to do something for the family. So Will does it and ends up in the situation, and you have Callis kind of pushing Will away because Callis knows at the end of the day what? He's going to lose Will, right? I mean, that dynamic wasn't right to begin with. He's in a heel group, but he comes back as a baby face. And then, but he's hanging out with heels.
Is he hanging out with heels though? Have we actually seen Will Ospreay? Hey, but has he interacted with Don since coming back? Like, Will's kind of doing his own thing. Don talks about how he's with Will, but Will isn't like, I could be wrong on this.
Yeah. They've had some segments together. Yes.
I missed out on that.
Yeah. Well, it's all good. But again, the whole point would be Callis is out there manipulating Will because he knows at the end of the day, this guy's not long for our family.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to either try to get him back into our good graces and totally in with the family when he's clearly kind of got one foot out the door. So I'm going to manipulate him or control him until we know where he's going to go. And if he's going to go, I'm going to get him first.
Yeah, that would have made. See, that's like character stuff. And I think we lack that in this company a lot. Like, we almost use like the good match stuff as a cheat code, right?
Oh yeah, dude, it's a cheat code all the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we were talking about earlier is like, well, we know Double or Nothing's going to have really great matches. And that's kind of what they just kind of lean on all the time. Hey, question for both of you. You know, Will is still at this point, probably the top star in the company and the hottest babyface, despite not being the champion. Do we run the risk of cooling him off heading into All In London?
Big time.
The risk is there. And that's where story comes in. You know, and JD followed me up on this one and throw it in. But basically, if you create the right story for Will, then you can keep him hot without delivering him as a world title at Wembley. In other words, if Callis is doing this stuff and Callis is thwarting Will, but you have to establish the goal of Will saying, you know, I want to be in Wembley. I want to be in the big match at Wembley. And Callis is working against him on that ultimately at the end of the day. That's how you can delay it. But it has to come at the hands of Callis, because then Will establishes that Wembley is his goal. Callis screws him on that, because then you can come back the next year of, okay, now he's going for his Wembley goal. Callis is his obstacle going into Wembley, and he finally gets to Wembley as far as like the world title match. That's how you can delay things. But you've got to direct the heat the proper way. It can't just be, well, you know, he got shuffled off with Roddy.
No, and here's the problem is we should be building him to Wembley now. It's May, almost June. The show is in September. We should be on those incremental steps to getting there. And this doesn't feel like he's going for the fourth title. Like it doesn't make any sense why he wants to be the King of the Ring at the moment. Like he should be on his ascension and he should be overcome. He should be slaying dragons to get there. And we're not doing that right now.
Right. And that's why I wonder if, and I understand if this is their reasoning and that they want to give Swerve a fair chance. I totally get that because you want to know what you have in him and you want to give him the best chance to succeed too, because building him is building you as a company as well. Mm-hmm. So I get it. If they're saying, okay, look, we've made the decision. Will's not getting a world title shot at Wembley. It's going to be the next year. So we've got to find a way to kind of sideverse him or delay him, in which case, okay, fine. Put it on Callis. Make Callis your source for the heat that stops him from getting the Wembley shot this year to push to next year. And maybe they're going to head that way. But like you said, they got to start pushing in that direction right now. And right now they don't look like they're pushing that way at all.
No, it doesn't feel like,
ramp, I don't know.
But that's the problem is I don't feel like we're building anything long-term in this company right now. Everything just feels so scattershot week to week. Like it feels like we're building to the pay-per-view, but there's no like overarching storyline. Right. I've done this show before. Paul Levitz, who wrote the Legion of Superheroes for DC Comics back in the day, had his paradigm that he wrote all his books for. You have your A story, your B story, and your C story. Right. Your A story is the driver of the books right now. When A story wraps up, B story moves in.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
to the A story, C story moves to the B story, yep. and then you start a new C story, right? And that's how the flow thing should work. And we should have that with our, specifically with our champion, right? Specifically with our top guy. Like, Will should be on. I still think it should be Will, because Will's the most over guy in the company. You should be looking to build a Swerve and Will, because I think that is ultimately your biggest match long term. Is you should be looking to build these guys into superstars, both of them. And I feel like they're trying harder with Swerve at the moment, because they got him out there with Christian. And as much as I like Roderick Strong, as much as I thought last night's angle came off pretty good, it's all the details. The devil is in the details, as the cliche goes, and we're just not getting those right details to get there.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, when you look forward, is they haven't started talking about Wembley for Will, which is if you want to establish, whether it be this year or next year, you want to establish that goal for Will, right? You want people to know that's what Will wants. He wants Wembley. He wants a world title shot at Wembley. That's how you start putting those seeds in people's minds of, this is where I'm going. I mean, we know it because of the Wembley factor, but not every fan is thinking that. But if you establish it, it's kind of like with WWE, what they did with Cody was they established this is his goal. And it took
day one,
almost 2 years. Yes, from day one, they established it. And if you had Callis promising Wembley to Will, right? And then Callis is doing these things that push him away while he's promising, then you're creating that people start wanting Will to get Wembley. And then Callis is the asshole who's in his way, and Callis is manipulating this shit. And then finally, you know, you end up with the blow up between the group. And by the way, the Tiger Driver, I don't know. I think it's somebody hitting Will with the Tiger Driver. I don't necessarily think Will be the first one to use a Tiger Driver.
Could be. I could see that. Now, my question to you is, we've seen Tony and them be reactionary to WWE. Last year, they tried to say that the friend bros, whatever thing you want to call, was going to be their answer to the Brochachos. Thank you. I couldn't remember the stupid name we had. That was going to be their answer. I've forgotten about it. Like most trauma, your brain blocks it out. So they tried to say this was going to be their bloodline, and all it was a bloodletting. Now, is it possible that I'm on a roll? Is it possible that they're going to try to mirror the Cody storyline with Will Ospreay and delay this thing as long as possible? Because, I mean, as much as we doubted WWE, and not believe me, no one's bigger WWE hater, Triple H hater than me. I wear that flag proudly, but it worked.
Right.
Do you think that they think they can get Wembley for a third year in a row and delay this till then and keep Will hot? Because I don't think
personally,
they can.
Personally, yeah. I would be doing 2025 for Will.
Really? Okay. Tell me why.
Because of that reason that you just gave. I don't think I need to give it away right away.
Okay.
I think that by me establishing that he wants Wembley and then putting the heat on Callis or whoever I decide to be an obstacle to keep Will from getting the shot this year, that then it's going to make people want it more next year, because then Will can be at Wembley this year after he gets a win in whatever match he's in. We'd still give him a high-profile match. It just wouldn't be the match he wants. He would make it known at Wembley of this year that next year my energy is directed towards getting either defending the title at Wembley next year or winning it at Wembley next year. And then I basically book my year out in my mind from this Wembley to the next Wembley of putting Will into the best place possible to get that moment. And then I'm going to be working on 2 to 3 heels to be the one to be his foil, whether that be MJF, Swerve. But maybe if it's Swerve, I don't think I'd be looking to turn him unless it makes sense. I really wish they'd kind of pick a path for Swerve where he could be as hot as he was. He kind of got cooled down. I think they're trying to heat him back up now. But anyway, the point being, I'd want to spend that year of making that the mission for Will and then delivering that moment. You can do it this year, but I think you're rushing it if you do it this year. And if it doesn't work out, if you don't have the follow-up and you aren't ready for it, I don't know, you could hurt yourself.
I see where you're coming from. The thing is, and then you need somebody for Will to fight in Wembley, because essentially what you want is, okay, I'm playing ball here. Let's say you have Swerve in the title match. Then you need Will in your B match, like your let's say double main event, let's just call it, like right, you need right. a big match. So you need Callus to be hooked up because you need him to slay dragons. Like I'm almost thinking like Bruno based storytelling, right? Where you have the monster factory, so to say, pumping out the dragons that he has to slay. With one of the greatest rosters ever assembled, I'm struggling to find out who you program him with to get that moment.
Well, and this is where the concept of planning that you talked about comes in. Mm-hmm. We should already know that answer.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing this right, we already know the answer. If I turn the clock back a few months, my answer would have been Takeshita.
We blew our load with that, though.
Well, and the reason would have been Takeshita is, you know, that's the guy that Callus chose would be the story, basically, is that he knows Will's got his foot out the door, but I'm going to keep promising Will to see if he'll stay with the family and agree to stay, you know, so I'm going to kind of keep him at bay. Because, I mean, they never really explained why Don wanted Osprey to fight everybody in the family, but then nobody else in the family fought each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You could have made that part of it, but Takeshita would have been the guy. And then you have the blow up between Callus and Will when it finally happens, when things appear that it's not going to happen for him this year at Wembley and it's Don screwing with him. Takeshita hits Will with the Tiger Driver. So now, and if Will is the international champ as they're doing, I'm just trying to work with what they've done. If Will is the international champ, he's now kind of going into Wembley injured from the Tiger Driver defending against Takeshita because Callus is deemed, if you're not with us now, I'm taking that belt from you, and that's where we're going to go from there. That's kind of what you could consider doing, but you need to start putting those pieces in place.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's the problem. It's like, it feels like we're really unfocused at the top, especially with this stuff right now. And I just don't know how we get to these marquee level title matches when we have to play Bucks cosplay Vince McMahon. And that just stuff, like, I know, like, I'm going to keep coming back to that because I just think it's such a detriment to the show right now. I really do.
Yeah. I think people don't want to see the infighting. They want to see everything move forward. And, you know, to point back to Austin McMahon that you brought up, what was it about Austin McMahon that made it work so well? It's that everybody could identify with it because everybody, well, not everybody, but most people always had that, and, you know, that problem with their boss. So seeing a guy torment the boss is kind of like therapy for people in a way. They all can identify with it. That's why Austin McMahon works so well too. Everybody could identify and they wanted Austin. Yeah, beat the man, beat the boss.
Yeah. And you had like two generational performers on television, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like we can't stand Vince McMahon, but damn, he was a great heel.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, in Bucks don't have that foil currently.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about. They don't have that
strong baby face. Now they do have one coming back. And JD kind of almost blew my spot. I didn't tell him this was coming up, but this actually broke after I talked to you guys earlier. MJF is set to return per Fightful Select. Sean Ross Sapp says can't speak exactly when, but it's around Forbidden Door in New York and could be sooner. Confirmed MJF and AEW have been in contact about a return in his presentation. MJF was adamant about finishing his reign even with the injuries that he had and confirmed that he signed an extension at some point after Double or Nothing 22 and is under contract for quite a while and is one of the highest paid performers on the roster. So what do you guys think about MJF coming back? And could MJF be the foil? I know they have the Devil storyline. Maybe like the Undisputed Kingdom or whatever they're called, and the evil EVPs get together at some point, and MJF is like the big babyface foil.
Maybe. Well, first off, as far as MJF coming back, when do the playoffs end? Because that's when he's going to come back.
Yeah, that's true. I think probably like right around Forbidden Door. Like I think that actually makes a lot of sense.
Hey. That's when a ratings bump comes. So MJF is smart.
He's going to time it. Right? Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they need him though. They do need him. But hopefully when he comes back, we don't go down the devil path too much and we don't lean heavier into WWE because I think that's going to hurt them if they do. You know, but maybe, I don't know. I always thought Wembley in my mind would either be Swerve Page or Swerve MJF. hard to tell. Depends on where Ospreay fits in the picture. But as far as like the United Kingdom, are they going to end up with Callis? Could that also be where this ends up?
Could, but the problem is there's just not that guy. I mean, it should have been Adam Cole. Adam Cole's ankle is destroyed. He's going to be out for a long time. Like, we just don't, like, it's crazy to me that we have this generational roster together, and I can't think of who I would program long-term with Will right now. It's bugging me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's the other reason why I kind of lean towards a 2025 for Wembley for his world title, because you got to start getting people over for him.
Joe. That's what it should be. It should be Joe. He should be fighting Joe
this year at Wembley.
Yeah, that should they. Callis should get Joe as a mercenary or something like that.
They should, but unfortunately, I think we're gonna get. And I hate myself for even thinking this, but just based off of what I saw on TV, Joe and Chris Jericho for some reason, because Jericho's doing the learning tree, and Samoa Joe is now like kind of in his backstage segments, look like he's trying to take Hook, and for some reason, like Shibata does not need to be under Joe's wing, like, but because I think Shibata is like an all-time great, but
yeah,
I guess the American audience doesn't know that yet. But now Joe looks like he was trying to take Shibata under his wing too, and I think that that's where we're probably gonna end up going, is like a Joe and Jericho match somewhere down the road.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
It could happen. I will say I do enjoy the learning tree stuff. For the most part, and Big Bill, I'm glad he's getting kind of a good spot. They could do a lot more with him, and he seems mm-hmm. to, he's got enough of a personality. His work's good enough. Not like he's like the top worker or anything like that, but he gets it done, and he's got the right personality. So I like seeing him kind of in a little bit of a spotlight, and hopefully they keep that going and. He doesn't suffer some of the fate that the people who end up with Jericho and then separate from Jericho, hopefully it doesn't work out like that for him.
Yeah. Hey, while I got you on here, and I didn't prep you on this. I just saw I have one of my TNA guys in the chat. What are your thoughts on, John, what are your thoughts on Joe Hendry? And should TNA be kind of putting all their chips on the side of Joe Hendry with the fame that he's gotten recently?
Yeah, well, I mean, why not? I've been a little bit off on my TNA watching for the last month or so. It's kind of been hard to keep up with it. But if he's getting a little bit hot for them because of the attention he's getting, don't you kind of have to ride it or try?
Yeah, I mean, they could use any little bit will help, right? Even if they don't put the title on him, but they could at least propel him into the main event, right? And have him be the big babyface foil for Moose and the system there. I think it makes all the sense in the world. Like how often are you going to get a guy on your roster, especially TNA, that has what, like he had a top 10 single, right? It was like, it got to number 6 on the charts at one point. You rarely get that. He did all the press all over the UK and it was all over the radio there. And he's still, I think his song is still in the top 40 on the iTunes chart. So I think you do have to go with that guy for a little bit, maybe not put the world title on him, because I don't know that he can carry a program. But you know, I think you do have to like propel him to your main event scene. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you could do that. You get him up into the picture at least, and see what you can do. You know, if nothing else, you get some attention somewhere, and try to build a little bit. It makes sense. Now I haven't seen this. Have you seen the Gresham stuff with the black goo?
I'm not happy with that. Look, I don't mind Gresham doing kind of a great Muda style character, because I think that what he has been doing the last couple of years obviously just isn't working anymore. Right. I think it worked at a time and place in Ring of Honor, like the, hey, I'm a very good wrestler. I think that worked in Ring of Honor, but I just don't think it's carrying it over to TNA. So to have him, you know, put on, which I think is a really cool mask. It's very reminiscent of Great Muda's mask that he wore in later years. But now he's got like the ink. It's called ink because he's the octopus, so it's not
right.
And like he puts it in people's mouths, and like they get sick. And in fact, if you come into contact with it, doesn't matter if he spits it in you get sick too, because we saw a referee like refereeing a match, and like out of nowhere he just goes over to the side like he got like a voodoo spell from Papa Shango and starts vomiting on the other side of the ring. JD, you're missing a lot with TNA, by the way.
I would also be vomiting on the side of the ring if I was watching this right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where it crosses the line. Like I agree with you that giving him a mask, switching up, Yeah. Switching up and giving them a mask and even spitting the ink or whatever they want to call it, you know, okay, fine. It's when you start having people getting sick over it that are secondary contacts, like there's some sort of outbreak going on. That's when it's like, no, please, no. And I'm unfortunate enough. I watched the Papa Shango stuff in real time. Yeah. I went to one of the tapings when they did some of Papa Shango Black Goo stuff. Just, we don't need to go there again.
Why do we keep recycling crap?
There's no need for it. All right, real quick, we're coming up on 50 minutes now, so I want to get to the Double or Nothing match card. I want to do a little bit of a preview and just get your guys' match predictions here. Double or Nothing, let's go. First match, Roderick Strong versus Will Ospreay for the International Championship. Do we put the title on Will Ospreay here? Is that the move?
I think it probably will be, but you know, the thing is that they can go a couple different ways. If they want to have the blow up between them somehow, they can have it delay Will that way. But I think you probably should maybe give him a title, especially if you're going to have him not go to Wembley this year as world champion or challenger.
JD, what you got?
Sure, give him a title. Everyone has a title in this company. Why not?
Timeless Toni Storm versus Serena Deeb, Women's World Championship. Serena Deeb ain't got a hope in hell, does she?
No.
Okay, yeah. All in on Timeless Toni. This one's interesting, and I think this is, look, we can say whatever we want about Malakai Black and, you know, the fact that he doesn't like to get pinned and all that stuff, and he's been a bit boring in his run for with AEW. But when the guy wants to, he can still have a pretty decent match. And him versus Adam Copeland, TNT Championship, it's a barbed wire steel cage. Am I reading that correctly? Barbed wire steel cage? Think that should probably be one of the better matches of the night. JD, you go first. Who you got?
Copeland.
Same.
John?
Yeah, same. And I think it will be a good match. I think they're both going to be motivated. And Copeland's doing a lot of great work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it'll be good.
Probably the best in-ring run of his career. And the guy's like 50.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Yeah. John Moxley versus Takeshita in an IWGP World Heavyweight Championship Eliminator match.
Eliminator.
which Eliminator. Has there ever been anybody that was in an Eliminator match that was not a champion that has actually won an Eliminator match? Have we actually had that before?
I don't think
so. Someone will correct this, but I don't think I ever remember anybody winning an Eliminator match and then getting in a title shot.
Yeah, I don't recall it. I'd have to go back into my I keep a spreadsheet. I have to go look. I don't remember
anything like that happening. Any chance the DDT guy beats the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion in this match?
I don't see it happen.
No. Okay. All right. So now we're seeing a problem, AEW. We kind of already know what's going on here. And I'll be honest, I don't give a shit about this next match, but I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts. Trent Beretta versus Orange Cassidy.
Trent Beretta, because they're going to do something with him. If it's good, they're going to do something with him.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Beretta as well. And, you know, they have this thing where Don keeps helping OC, so maybe this will be where Don ends up helping Trent or something like that. Who knows? We'll see where they go with it. I don't know. They're not tipping their hand on it, but I do think Trent.
Yeah, we really don't know who's going to win the match, but I'll be honest, I don't care. I think Trent's going to eventually, you know, be with Don Callis. Maybe that's where they go with Wembley for Will, Trent Beretta. God, I hope not. Chris Jericho versus Hook versus Katsuyori Shibata.
How did two guys win a three-way match?
Well, dude, you know,
that kind of hurt me in the soul. But anyway,
I'm completely taken out of this whole storyline. I think this is a big waste of Shibata, but I am very clearly biased towards Shibata. I think he should be, like, you know, challenging John Moxley for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship as opposed to being wasting his time with this FTW learning tree horse shit. So, I mean, clearly Chris Jericho is going to retain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shibata's there to lose.
I think this one's easy to predict. Willow Nightingale versus Mercedes Moné, TBS title.
Yeah, we talked. Yeah, Mercedes. We talked about that one.
Yeah,
Moné.
They have to, yeah. Maybe they'll use something out of this to really go strong heel for her. Mercedes.
I imagine that happens.
I think that's where she's going with it. And the fans, I don't know if that was their original intent with her. the fans probably nudged it along.
Yeah. I think they're making the right call, making her a heel. She's a better heel. The AEW fans, you know, don't really want her, don't really want to cheer her, don't want really much to do with her at all. But if she can be an effective heel, I think that's where the money is at for Mercedes Moné. Next up, we got Anarchy in the Arena. We got the Elite, Young Bucks, Okada, and Jack Perry versus Brian Danielson, Darby Allin, and FTR. Brian Danielson, multiple concussions. Darby Allin coming off of a concussion. So, you know what? Let's put him in a street fight. Who you guys got in Anarchy in the Arena?
The Elite.
Elite. Yeah, you got to go the heel. Unless they're going to bag up the idea.
They should. They're not going to.
It's got to be the Elite.
Yeah.
You know, or at least it should be. I mean, you know, depends on, we got a blood and guts coming, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how they want to go about that, but I think you want the Elite probably to go over. What worries me about there is the lingering story that they haven't talked too much about, where Claudio was not happy about Danielson doing that match. So I don't know if something's going to come out of that.
Maybe Claudio, who has kind of been off and on heel anyway, maybe he just goes full blown heel and they can set up a Danielson Claudio feud down the road.
Sure.
Yeah.
Go watch that.
Yeah.
Anything with Claudio or Danielson to me is like, yes, I'll take it. Please. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. And well, and we know that Danielson keeps threatening to retire here pretty soon, or at least retire from full-time active duty. I don't think they call it active duty. That's my military talking, but you know, full-time active wrestler. And maybe he's just like, you know what? I really want to have a match with Claudio. So let's set that one up next. That's probably what's happening with that.
Probably.
Yeah. And I'm fine with that again, you know, especially if, you know, where's the BCC going at this point, right? It's probably, I mean, where's Yuta? He must be like really hurt.
He's really hurt. I think Dave reported that a while back.
Yeah, I heard he was really hurt, but did Dave, I don't remember Dave saying what exactly it was.
Yeah, I don't know. They probably just didn't release the medical info, but yeah, it seemed like he's pretty hurt.
So, I mean, maybe you're wrapping up the BCC. You're trying to find a way to do that. I mean, Mox is off with IWGP for now, at least for a while, a little while longer. And maybe that's where the plan is. And oh, yeah, I'm okay with that because that's going to be a great match.
Yeah.
Hopefully the story is right.
Yeah. And then we got the main event. As much as I like Christian Cage, he's probably, you know, one of the weaker title challengers for a pay-per-view in a long, long time. And that's not saying anything about his ability or how much I love the guy, but like, you knew the result of the match the moment it was booked. And in fact, it probably shouldn't have even been booked. You know what it reminds me of, and this is going to be blasphemous, but I'm just going to say it anyway. When Christian Cage won the Impact title from Kenny Omega, his first challenger in Impact was fucking Brian Myers. And it's like, why are you doing that? It's like, okay, they're going to have a good match, but everybody knows that Brian Myers ain't going to do nothing. Now, Christian Cage obviously is 17,000 levels above Brian Myers, but he's coming off of a loss in his last feud, and you just kind of thrust him into the spotlight, and you created a weak challenger for a pay-per-view in a market that you're having trouble drawing anyway. But this is where we're at. What do you guys think of the main event?
It's going to be a good match, but I'm like super disinterested in it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Swerve's going to win, but Christian's great, so it'll be good for what it is. Hopefully it does what they want it to do, which is really kind of push Swerve higher and higher. Because that's what we kind of need. We need somebody to start catching on and getting traction and meaning something in numbers.
John, lastly, before I let you go, King and Queen of the Ring coming up this weekend. Cody Rhodes versus Logan Paul. Logan Paul's the United States champion. Who you got and where do you see this thing going?
Oh, well, it'll be Cody, right? So Cody, and I know we've had some texts about this one. They've made a couple of small comments. I think their plan with Cody could be that he's going to chase the Grand Slam. So in other words, Cody ends one chase, but now he finds the next chase.
Yeah.
So then they don't have to answer, you know, what the challenger necessarily is going to be. It's that Cody's on this next chase. I want to be the Grand Slam champ. Maybe I'm wrong. But they did that thing where he referenced the Grand Slam. Then Logan Paul took the title, the U.S. title, off of the match. So that's not in defense. So I think they could be going that way. Give Cody a chase.
I see it.
Yeah. Becky Lynch versus Liv Morgan, Women's World Championship. I honestly, didn't know that Liv Morgan was still a thing. But she's still out there kicking, huh?
Surprise. Yeah. Well, she's on a revenge tour right here. don't say anything bad about Liv or you'll make her fans really mad at you.
I already did it with the AEW fans this week. I don't need the Liv Morgan fan smoke.
Oh, well, yeah. If that's going to piss them off and drive traffic, Liv Morgan's getting thumbnailed this week. You can bet on that. Who do we think is going to win between Lynch and Liv Morgan?
Well, I think the timing on that depends on Rhea, right? When's Rhea Ripley going to be back? Because that's where Liv's eventual destination is, because you know that Dom's going to end up with Liv. So I'm pretty sure that's
where they're going, like Dom like turns on Rhea, because Rhea's like full-blown babyface at this point, right?
She's pretty much there, yeah. I don't know if they'll have Dom turn on Rhea or if they'll have Dom help Liv beat Becky at some point. Or they'll, you know, it depends on, you can go a lot of different ways with that kind of a story, right? Either Dom turns on Rhea or you have Dom go early and Rhea comes back with Dom finding a new mommy, right? Because that'll be the gimmick. You know, you can go it a lot of different ways with that. And if you wanted to get the belt off of Becky to put it on Liv so Rhea comes back to get the belt, she's got to go through Liv to get it. You can go a lot of different ways. But at the end of the day, I think Liv and Dom are going to be together on the story.
Intercontinental Championship, Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable versus Bronson Reed. Who we got in this one, John?
I think Sami. I don't know why you do a change yet. Not that they can't go to Gable. I honestly hate three ways where you sit there and look at, okay, well, the champ can lose without losing. I don't like that stuff.
Yeah, I hate it too. I don't see Sami Zayn losing in Saudi. You know, he's very popular there, but I think eventually they got to put the title over on Chad Gable because that's where the heat's at, right?
Yeah, he's got to be champ at some point, and he's doing some good work. And you know, you go back before Triple H got there, and when Vince was running things, Gable would have never gotten where he is now.
Yeah. So King of the Ring finals, Gunther versus the winner of Randy Orton Tama Tonga. You can kind of see where this is headed. Who do you think wins King of the Ring?
I would think Gunther at this point. When they decided to go with Gunther beating Jay, and that was a pretty good match for what it was. I like Gunther, but I think that'll end up being probably Gunther's role, as he'll be the king.
And then a Queen of the Ring, Lyra Valkyrie. I don't know who the hell that person is, but Lyra Valkyria versus either Nia Jax or Bianca Belair. Who wins Queen of the Ring?
Well, JD, if you want to jump in, go ahead. But I know you don't really watch a lot of.
He has no opinion on this.
All right. I'm done. I watch everything almost if I can. Anyway, Lyra, they're giving Lyra a good push. Okay. They're really trying to associate with her with Becky. So they're trying to position her right. And she's making a run through this tournament. So they're trying to put her in the right space. I think Nia's going to win. They established a knee injury going on with Bianca. So I think they're going to use that for Nia to get the win. Then Nia's going to go in against the heavy underdog. And if they do it right with Lyra putting up a good fight, and I hate that I'm booking this with Nia because while she's better than she was before, it's still Nia. I think Nia has to go over because then it positions her to go challenge Bayley.
I totally agree. You know, the winners of each, the Queen of the Ring and the King of the Ring, and they get title shots at SummerSlam now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. So you can be going that direction. Hey, be thankful it wasn't Jay, because then we'd get either Yeet King or King Yeet. If he had been
this God. Yeah.
I'm telling you, they would have done it. When I saw them put him in there, I thought, oh, no, we're going to get the Yeet King. But they didn't do it.
Well, I'm glad that they're not doing that. John, this has been a real pleasure. I'm really thankful that you were able to come on and talk some booking with us. Get to you guys. I'll get to you guys in a couple minutes. But I want to go ahead and let John go. John, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you for mentoring me and JD on the art of booking wrestling. We love talking to you. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll be in the chat later.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it. And I had a great time.
All right, John. John Muse, everybody. Thank you for being here, John Muse. I greatly appreciate it. All right, just real quick before we go, I just want to acknowledge everybody in the chat. I thank you guys for being here. I didn't actually get to any chats tonight because John was just going, and I just didn't want to interrupt his train of thought. So Kurt Kaysen says, hold on. He says, Mike is doing his pre-podcasting gel-clink, gelking routine. Do you know who Kurt Kaysen is, JD?
I don't. No.
It's Brady. Brady, HP Joker. He has several different aliases on YouTube because he keeps getting kicked out of like YouTube channels. So he creates a new one. So Kurt Kaysen is his latest alias. So he said, "I'm going to be a big boy one of these days." Keeps telling his wife, "Well, I'm not. Can't read that on the air." But David Allen said, "The legend is here." Three of them, and then he says, "John Muse is booking this. I remember him his writing as a teen." Well, there you go, John. Damn, I wish John was still on. I'm sure he's still listening. So
he would like that.
But David Allen actually remembers John's writing from whenever he was a teen. And then Jonathan Messenger, Patreon subscriber, thank you for being here, says, "What is the John Muse energy drink of choice?" I'm sorry, if I would have seen this earlier, I would have gotten Muse's answer for you. He seems like he might be a Rockstar energy guy. I don't know. We'll see. And Muse's book for Jericho storyline, I remember that, so this should be interesting. Yeah, it definitely was a fun podcast. And then IO Productions was in the house, and he let us know that the winners get a title shot at SummerSlam, and that I guess Lyra Valkyria, she's a real person, she's a Irish talent from NXT UK. So there you go. I have been out on WWE TV, but I did watch WrestleMania and Backlash, and I enjoyed both. So I don't know that I'm going to check out King of the Ring. I'll see if I get time, but Double or Nothing weekend, man, I'm looking forward to that. You watch it on Sunday?
The Double Nothing? Yeah, I'll watch it Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely going to be checking out. I got a 4-day weekend, Memorial Day weekend, my favorite weekend of the year because I don't have to work. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. Hey guys, thank you so much for being here. I greatly appreciate it. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, just a reminder, if you had to listen to a bunch of ads during this show, you could have had that ad free by going to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. And if you're a YouTube subscriber, thank you so much for being here. Please hit the like button. Make sure you're a subscriber and lay down a comment. And tomorrow night, right here on YouTube, I am going to be releasing, it'll be a live stream. I'm releasing my MLW Fury Road recap show. I do it just like I do Brace for Impact. I recorded it on Sunday night. So Patreon subscribers have had access to it since Sunday. Got a lot of good feedback on the show. MLW fans are out there and they don't get a ton of content. So I've been covering some of their stuff lately because I have access to it now. So go ahead and be sure to check that out right here tomorrow night. And if you would be so inclined to check out our X-Men 97 retrospective that I released last night we did a live stream last night. Didn't really give everybody a bunch of a heads notice. I kind of just did it because I'm playing with the StreamYard software. It worked out pretty good. So please go ahead and check that out. Give us the big thumbs up on that. I would greatly appreciate it. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us this week. And until next week, mahalo.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain from the track when we unite and stick, this isn't A.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.